Hello again, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar that relates to a topic we Boomer women want to know more about, how to succeed at our work and or how to help our children and grandchildren do the same. My name is Ann Holmes. I'm your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. In a moment, I will introduce our guest author and expert, Joan Ramirez, so we can start our discussion on her book, Let It Go, Let It Flow, Leadership, and we'll also be talking about how to determine your leadership style and how to work with your leadership style. So let me begin by telling you a little bit more about Joan. She holds a Master of Science in Business, Medical, and Technical Journalism, as well as two others in ESL, English as a Second Language, I assume, Joan, and Education. She has published on a variety of topics from cochlear implants to the economy and has conducted workshops, domestic and foreign, on the nuances of business communications for managers and startup companies. Joan is the leader of her own enterprise, offering training programs for entrepreneurs of all levels, and in addition to the book we are discussing tonight, has published two other books, Jamie is Autistic, Learning a Special Way, and Go For It Leadership, Handbook for All Students. Joan can be reached at her email address, which is writerjr1044@gmail.com. That's writerjr1044@gmail.com. Joan's topic tonight is Know Your Leadership Style, and we'll also, of course, go at that topic from the point of view of discussing her most recent book, Let It Go, Let It Flow, Leadership. Now, Joan, let me start by asking you a question that relates to myself, because I always like to relate the books I'm reading to what it means to me in my own life. And I was talking with my sister the other night. She's in her early 60s, and for all of her professional life, she's been the assistant curator at a regional museum. But she was telling me that as she's aged, she's changed her leadership style. But based on some of her comments regarding how people have reacted to her authoritative, decisive style, I'd say that the topic of how to be an effective leader is one that many of us, especially women, really are challenged by. Sometimes I think it's harder for women to be comfortable in the role of a leader, even though I think that we're natural leaders. But so let's get to that first question that I would like to ask you, Joan. In your book, you profile 11 effective leaders from all periods of history. You cover Alexander the Great, Catherine the Great, Winston Churchill, George Patton. And of all those 11 leaders, you have only got four that are women: Catherine the Great, Golda Meir, Helen Keller, and Margaret Thatcher. And none of the leaders that you profile are still alive. So I'm curious, are you implying that we have a dearth of true leaders, especially women leaders, in the world right now?
Well, you know, it's funny because the second book that I did, Go For It Leadership Handbook for All Students, was based upon Eleanor Roosevelt, who's my hero. I mean, for me, she could do no wrong. This is, to me, epitomizes a woman. I mean, I know, excuse me, I warned you about the allergies. This woman was a woman for all seasons. I think we all get to an age, 50, 60, 70 and beyond, and that's when life really begins. I really do believe life begins at 50. And we see the world around us, and I must say that there are, I think, a paucity of very young women who really, from all of my travels and talks in this country, who really aspire to being leaders. And I think maybe that's why subconsciously I have more male than I do females. And it saddens me because our generation, 50, 60s and beyond, we really wanted to go out there. We wanted to make a difference. I was inspired by my mother. She wanted to help people. She wanted to change people's lives. And it's really interesting that you should say that, and I don't say I'm going to apologize, but I certainly agree with you. I did come to think of it. And I think, as I said, it was a subconscious move on my part. Also, I think because I'm so enamored of Eleanor Roosevelt that I think I gave the best first in the other book. And in this book, I was really more focused on just the leadership, what you need to be a leader.
Okay. Well, that certainly makes sense because you certainly cover the various ways of looking at what you need to be a leader very well in the book. I was impressed with the various different ways that you attack that topic. I mean, this is a huge topic. What does it mean to be a leader? But let's continuing what we just were talking about, do you see that any of the world leaders of today that you think might eventually join your list? I mean, we've got some leaders that I tried to think today of leaders, and that my first thought was, of course, presidents and kings or something like that. But then I realized that we have leaders that are really not necessarily heads of state of countries. Like I think Pope Francis would be considered a leader. Bono. I think we have to look at Bono as being a leader. I think that he is a great humanitarian, and yet who would have thought that a musician would be a person who would have taken on so much responsibility to trying to help the world?
You're right.
But then what about the Dalai Lama or Bill Gates or Sir Richard Branson, Oprah Winfrey, you know, Angelina Jolie or Gabby Giffords? I'm curious, do you think any of these people have...
Oh, Gabby Giffords. Oh, my God. Absolutely. She's a hero.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking only because with Hillary we get Bill, I think Hillary Clinton would make a great president.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you.
I really do. And look who she's married to. My God. The man, he was one of the greatest political leaders that, you know, that we've ever had. But think about what you just said. They're all men? I mean,
well,
I'm thinking...
Exactly. Well,
I'm thinking of...
Maybe we should throw in Sonia Sotomayor.
Without a doubt.
Right. Yes.
You have to do that because my husband is a magnificent, educated, successful, well-educated, as I said, lovely Puerto Rican man, and so is she. And mm-hmm. I think she's Puerto Rican. I'm almost sure she is. But the point is, whether she is or she isn't, she's really done a lot with her life. But then think of all the women who have been assassinated. Bhutto, Prime Minister Bhutto. I mean, I just feel in every lifetime someone touches you so. I mean, if it wouldn't be Eleanor, it would probably be Helen Keller. I think there's mm-hmm. a lot of women, Madame Curie, these were brave women who soldiered on long after their partners had left them. And mm-hmm. and let's not forget Annie Sullivan. Were it not for her, Helen Keller wouldn't have been where
absolutely.
She was.
That's
but
absolutely
it's,
true.
It's tragic when you think about it. I mean, you look overseas and you look at Queen Elizabeth. She's her star is fading because she is mm-hmm. aging. And
right.
you look at all the other countries. So many of the monarchs have disappeared. Now Nancy Pelosi, I don't know. She doesn't play as strong a role as she did. So it's just frightening. It really is. And I try very hard wherever I go to inspire young women to be leaders. But even the Girl Scouts, to my chagrin, do you know the other day you talk about leadership? I started out as a brownie. They're taking the cookies, and I think they're selling them online. God help us all.
Oh, I heard that there was going to be changes. I hadn't heard what the changes were, and I was worried that it was going to be that. Because, you know, I think for a lot of girls, that's their first experience at entrepreneurial experience. You know, their first time that they're – it takes a lot, and some of the people might argue that today's world isn't as safe for girls to go door to door and sell cookies, but hopefully, I mean, they're in their neighborhood, so you'd think that hopefully there'd be some safety in the fact that they're in their neighborhood. But
well, when we were young, our parents accompanied us all over, and mm-hmm. it's a different world today. But but selling cookies online, I mean, it just took so much. And then I sold so many cookies, and I advanced, and I got this badge, and I got that badge, and to my chagrin, I was asked by a local school to get involved with the Girl Scouts, and the woman's idea who was in charge of the troop of getting them involved was doing paper doll cutouts, and I just cut out in plain English.
Oh, you must. That's terrible.
Oh, and I was trying to get them involved in, you know, when I was going to school, you could either be a secretary or a nurse. And women
mm-hmm.
were not involved in sports. And my friend's daughter is involved in hockey. She's got a red belt or something like that.
Okay.
And I think it's wonderful. But by the same token, what are we doing? We're encouraging girls to go into STEM. Okay, well, that's wonderful. But we don't tell them about leadership. You know, I mean, just the little things when you're even helping to lead in your community. Don't get me started.
Mm-hmm.
It's just frightening. It really is. And I guess to answer your question again, that's why when I thought of Eleanor, I guess that's where everything ended for me. It began and ended. I mean, I can think of many women in the arts. I mean, we look at Lauren Bacall. She was incredible. We've
mm-hmm.
lost a lot of our role models of what a woman should be. I mean, she was strong. She was beautiful. Katharine Hepburn. She was strong. She was beautiful. There's so many actresses that my mother.
Lucille Ball, you know, she was a business. I mean, we think of her as a lightweight comedian, but yet she was the brains behind Desi Lu, I believe.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It sure wasn't the man behind the woman, it was the woman behind the man. But
mm-hmm.
you don't have that anymore. You have very little of it. I mean, Audrey Hepburn, to me, epitomized grace and beauty and charm, and she truly was the most magnificent ambassador for UNICEF. So when you talk about women, more women need to be involved, but it's a whole cultural thing where women are going off into other areas. But I think we're getting off the subject, so I apologize. I will take your lead.
No problem. No problem. It's all right when, you know, when we're having interesting discussion to deviate from the, you know, the main course. That's not a problem. So basically what I was saying is, do you think that some of these women and men that we've been discussing, do they have what it would take to eventually get them up into that list of, I mean, say if in 40 years you were to write this book, Volume 2, would any of our leaders of today that we've been talking about make that the cut to be on the profiles that you do in the new book?
To my chagrin, I don't know how many would make it, to be honest with you. Because Eleanor was a woman for all seasons. She had empathy. She championed the underdog. I mean, I lost one of my dearest friends, Victoria Lucas. She got me started in PR many decades ago. And she said to stand on my own two feet and never let anyone tell me that I couldn't do anything. She was a marvelous woman. She died about a year ago. She was in her 80s, and I hope her sister is listening to this, Tammy. She was incredible. She had so much to offer. I think young women today have more potential. There's so many more opportunities open to them, but they all seem to run toward the sports, toward the technical aspects. I don't see as many women going toward leadership roles. And, I mean, I'm not as involved in the Girl Scouts as I was, although I did offer recently to be a Girl Scout leader. We'll see what happens with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't think that the volumes in the next century or even in the next 40, 50, 100 years, I don't know if women would aspire to that. I mean, I still think there is a glass ceiling. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
go ahead.
I think young women have smashed one layer, but when they smash one layer, another one seems to rise up.
Right.
And I just think it's because they get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, I was in the city, and a lovely young woman in her early 30s, she put together a meeting. She wanted to be the chair, the leader. She wanted to get people involved in an Ivy League's magazine. I don't want to say the name because I don't want to make her uncomfortable. But
mm-hmm.
she went to a lot of trouble to spearhead this, and she wanted to start a whole club. And I was the only one that showed up.
Oh.
And she sent invitations online to 30 people. And later on, I looked on Facebook and I saw that a few people had said, you know, sent in that they couldn't make it today. That doesn't do her very much good. And she was dumbfounded. And we sat and talked, and I could see she was uncomfortable because she wanted to do something. She's an entrepreneur, and she said, I wanted to do something good. And she said, I don't understand why, you know, no one responded, and I don't know. I'm dumbfounded myself. I mean, I conducted my first leadership workshop at a college in New Jersey on Tuesday night, and it went very well. But to my chagrin, my husband was sitting in the back of the room. He had driven me. We only have the one car, and he was very proud, and he was grinning from ear to ear. But one of the people involved in putting the program together, a woman, not a young woman, and when I say young, we're all young at heart, but a woman who's seasoned, she seemed to lean more towards speaking to my husband about leadership than to me. And I thought that was sexism in reverse.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, yeah, it was interesting, and I was rather perplexed by it because she was very interested in hearing what he had to say on the topic of the book. And he, as a matter of fact, I included him in the workshop discussion because he had an example, and I used examples from real life, and I had the participants doing group work. It was hands-on. But it was interesting that she was more interested in his take on the topic of leadership than mine, and I'm the author.
Yeah, I think she missed the boat there. I think that I don't know why she went that route, but it doesn't make sense to me. You know, in that case, I think you're saying he was the chauffeur, so, you know, he wasn't the main. I mean, you were the main person invited, so that just doesn't make any sense to me.
No,
but,
it doesn't. But different strokes for different folks. He's marvelous. He had contributed, and you know, as a matter of fact, it's funny you should use the words because I've never treated him that way. We are partners in this marriage, and he said,
"Oh, sure."
I just
thought he was the chauffeur because he served to drive you there that night.
Right, and that's what he said to me. He said to me, if anyone asks, tell them I'm your driver. And I said, I'll do no such thing. I said, you don't have to say a word, but, you know, I'm going to introduce you as my husband. But it was interesting because it was sort of like role reversal in it. And the number of women, I'm happy to say, there was an even mix of young men and young women. I mean, they were young. They're just starting out. They either were still going to the college or they were in the graduate program. And I was very happy about that. And it sort of made me feel uncomfortable because it wasn't like he was monopolizing the conversation. She walked over to him. So, you know, I felt, what's going on here? But at any rate, let's continue.
Sure. Of the people that you've profiled, your 11 people, and then the few names that I threw out there, I'm curious if you see that there's commonalities between the people. I'm trying to figure out if you have something that would say, what is it that causes a person to rise up and become a leader? Is it something that they're born with or something that they seize upon as they're traveling through life? Or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both, but in the case of someone like Margaret Thatcher, she just was incredible. She had the ability to be a wife, a mother, a prime minister. She had the ability to gather people. She was very firm on the Falklands issue. But when it came right down to it, I don't remember her background. I know I researched everyone thoroughly. Right now my mind's a blank. I guess it's probably the sinuses. But she knew what she was doing, and I don't think she was born to the manner born, but she really aspired to be more, and she really was a role model for women because she didn't back down. And I very rarely back down. I try very hard to walk the talk, to use the common language. But I think what I liked in each of my examples was that they had the courage of their conviction to move forward through adversity. And, I mean, Golda Meir, my God, look at the obstacles that she faced. Her country was constantly being badgered on all sides. And
right.
Helen Keller, I mean, my God, most women would say in that day and age, I'm blind, I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to, you know, just do whatever I can do to get by until I die. And she didn't. She
mm-hmm.
forged ahead. And Catherine the Great, I'm sure she had many, many, many obstacles. So these were women, very much like Prime Minister Bhutto. That was a great loss. She could have been great things. I'm thinking now the lovely young girl who was shot in the eye because she stood up for her rights.
Mm-hmm.
She's a role model for leaders, too. I'm blanking at her name. I think her name is Allah. My name is her book. You know the one I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Right.
And I think that she should be showcased on every magazine and every TV program across the nation because she really is a true, she epitomizes what it means to be a leader at a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely she does. And I had her name earlier today. But my desk is a mess, and I can't figure out where it went. So we'll just say we both know who we're talking about, and hopefully our listeners will know who she is too, because she's, you know, doing amazing things, especially considering that what she has to overcome with her society that she's born into. So,
yes.
So I'm curious if you would talk a little bit about leadership styles. You know, because you identify multiple styles in the book, but, you know, I don't know if people really think about that when they think she's a leader, he's a leader. I think that they might just, you know, not stop to think about that there are different styles of being a leader, and that's so important, I think, to what you're saying in the book.
It is very important, and people think of an autocrat as someone who is, you know, it's my way or the highway. And
mm-hmm.
many autocratic leaders started out being very fair-minded and being very mild-mannered, but I think life changed their philosophy. I think when you're in a company today and you have to be responsible for the bottom line, you have to rule with a firm hand, and many people view that as being autocratic, especially if you're low man on the totem pole and you're striving upwards. So I think autocrat has different meanings to different people, also depending upon the way you grew up. If you had a very stern father and a very giving mother, or you had a very stern mother and a very giving father, then, you know, that will resonate with you. Oh, you're just like my father, you're just like my mother. So I think it's hard for people to separate. I know I worked mm-hmm. with someone years ago, and I viewed them as the grand dictator, and then I realized what they were doing, they had to be that way. And last Tuesday night, it was really wonderful because so many of the workshop participants started out as team members, went to participatory, and then went to transformational. People think that you can't change. You're born either autocratic or you're born as a team member. You can change, but the important thing is to change effectively and to
mm-hmm.
stick with your style and to use that to encourage others and not to just use the style like you use the title. For many years I was untitled manager of communications. I used to say to my mother, as long as they spell the name right on the paycheck, as long as I can cash it, I'm more concerned with getting people together to do a good job, to be cohesive, to be a team. If all I'm concerned about is being a manager, then I'm not going to last because people are going to look at my title and they're not going to look at me. And when you're leading, you lead with the personality. You don't lead with the title on a card.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Absolutely,
there are different styles, and I think people should be more focused on the style than they should on the, in other words, many roads lead to Rome. You have to take the one that will lead you in the direction that's most effective, as opposed to just saying, okay, here's my card. I'm a leader. I'm a manager. I work very hard for this title. But does the title go along with the personality? So personality leads and title follows, I guess is what I'm saying.
All right, great. Early in the book, you discussed leadership training in the Marine Corps, and I believe you noted 14 traits that those who serve the Corps should possess. And
mm-hmm.
among them were some really important ones in terms of leadership, decisiveness, dependability, a sense of justice, knowledge, and loyalty were a few that I pulled out of that. I'd be curious if you would be able to tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the traits that the Marine Corps values and why they are so important to developing leadership. And is that what the Marine Corps really does? They used to say, a few good men, but are all Marines leaders? Is that part of their training, is to become a leader?
I think Marines are trained to be good soldiers, to be good in peace and in war. I think that they have a code of ethics that they live by, and if they happen to rise to leadership capacity, title, position, that's fine. But I don't think that they really are concerned with being leaders in the sense of title. I think that they really want to take care of flag, honor, and nation. And I've seen mm-hmm. this because not even just the Marines, although I think it was, I was at the College of Staten Island a couple of weeks ago with my husband, and we were listening to someone in the armed services, the Army, and very much like the Marines, the young girl, she went in, she followed in her father's footsteps. She found it very difficult to overcome a lot of the stereotypes that men have about women in battle and people in general and training. But very much like with the Marines, what she did was she just wanted to be helpful to her mm-hmm. country. And I remember when I went to a job fair where I was looking for different literature because I wanted to volunteer. And I was speaking to a Marine, and he was very impressive with his uniform and everything. But what came across to me was the loyalty and the feeling of solidarity with his comrades, for lack of a better word. I'm blanking right now.
Sure.
And I just thought that, gee, isn't that lovely? How it's all for one and one for all, like the Three Musketeers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if push came to shove and they were in battle and they were faced with the enemy, he wouldn't be saying, well, I'm the one that's going to kill the most because I'm the one that's done the most. I've been there the longest and it'll lead me to a higher position. Maybe I'll even become a congressman like mm-hmm. Senator Bradley from New Jersey, who's a hero. But I really do feel that they do live up to their creed. And also my husband will vouch for that because he was in the reserves and he just had nothing but wonderful things to say about these people. You go in, it's a mission, it's a calling, and you do your thing and you truly do honor a country and flag.
And we need those people, so I'm glad that they're being so well trained. As you kind of alluded to there in your story about the battle and not worrying about who's the leader but just getting the job done, not everyone can be a leader, especially of the magnitude of some of the people that we've discussed earlier, Helen Keller or, we won't go back to them. We've talked about them. And not everyone can be a leader. So what can we do, those of us who might find that we will never become the household name, not a name that everyone recognizes, oh, she's this world-class leader. We can't all be Gabby Giffords, let's put it that way. So what can we do to be effective leaders within our family or our communities, or is that really not possible? Do we just have to realize that not everybody can be a leader because somebody has to be the one that the leaders are leading?
I think everyone can be a leader. I go to different schools. I'm hoping to switch over more now to writing full-time, but as of now, I'm traveling to different schools, different grade levels, and I find that a lot of the middle grade and the high school are a little bit lost. They don't know whether to follow the crowd, Even I find in the older elementary grades, the fifth and sixth grade, as they're transitioning to middle school, and they're not sure whether they should follow the crowd, they're finding themselves, and I talk about how I got to be a manager in a company. Unfortunately, I lost that after September 11th. It's a tragedy. I mean, thank God I'm alive, so I don't complain. But mm-hmm. I talk to them about what it means to have a teamwork, and not so much to worry about even being a leader in a club or a leader of a play, but to be a leader in life and to inspire others. And it was so wonderful. I was working with a group of students, and they finished early, and they said, three of them said to me, can I help somebody who isn't doing well? I happen to work in a very good school where, you know, I rotate different classes, different needs, ESL, special ed, my majors. But I really thought it was wonderful. And this is something that you don't see often enough. Children will be through with their assignment. They will be through with the test. They'll take a book. They'll read. In New York, I see them, they're putting on their headsets and they're going into the hall and they're using their cell phones in New Jersey. I think a lot of them are more into reading, which is fine, but these three individuals, the first thing they did was they went over to help someone that needed it. So you can be a leader in your classroom. You can be a leader in your community. One young lady that was at my workshop on Tuesday evening, she started out hoping to be a teacher. There were no positions, so she's getting involved in her community. She has a lot of ideas. She's hoping that she'll be able to lead her community. I have a councilman where I live, and he's hoping to lead people in the direction of political action. So I think we can all be leaders. And I think it's important.
You're certainly convincing about that, and I would say clearly you're a cheerleader for the importance of people learning to become leaders. So I guess let's something that I didn't really say a lot about when I introduced you, let's take a step back and clarify a little bit as to where you've come up with this knowledge that not all of us have that's so important. What would you say that's in your background that led you to write this book?
Oh, goodness, that's an easy question to answer. My father passed away last year at 100. No, I'm not that old. Mm-hmm. He was a teacher in New York City for 50 years, and then he went to Florida and he taught for about 20. He, in his 90s, was laying under cars doing auto mechanic stuff. And he felt you show by example. And he felt that if you learn something, you pass it along. And my mother was a copywriter. And she was very creative. She was a marvelous writer. She had an imagination. I guess that's where I get it from. And my parents always said to me, never, especially my mother, never settle for second best. And I can remember at 9 years old, we had a little area in the recreation room where we had our house. And I would be at the blackboard, and I would be conducting a class. 9 years old, and I was leading these kids that were younger than me. I think it's just in my genes. I think my parents were very firm on that. They both said to me, if you see someone's down, try and lift them up, try and help. It gives me joy. I like to help people. But it's unfortunate that in this day and age, a lot of people don't appreciate that. I can remember before he died a few years ago, I visited my parents, and we went out to a mall. They were in Florida. And he went to open up a door for me and for a young lady. And the young lady's reply was, I don't need you. I can open up my own door. I'm not a weakling. Well, you know, my father stood there. He turned beet red. He said, I'm never going to do that again. Because he felt lead by example. He felt if he did that, then maybe young fellows standing in the background would do the same thing. So, you know, there's no knowing. There's no knowing. Women today, the woman I was with last night, the young woman who we were at this meeting together, and we were, to our chagrin, no one else showed up, she epitomizes what true leadership is. she really and truly wanted to lead this discussion group. But there are a lot of young women who are just taking the tact, well, I'm there, no one helped me, I don't need any help, and I think we all need help.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I get it from. Also, I get it from my beloved uncle, who was a hero in World War II, and he led by example. He helped my uncle in their pharmacy. He came out of the war. He could have gotten married and left my uncle high and dry, and he came back, and he helped my uncle to lead this pharmacy for many, many years. So, you know, I have a lot of people in my family who have shown that you have to put words into action, and that's what
mm-hmm.
I do whenever I can.
All right. So would you say that this type of background of people that can teach their children that you have to put words into action, is that something that we must have in order to develop more leaders? Or I guess where I'm getting at the kernel of the question is, what kind of background do you think that one needs to have in order to be able to develop into a leader?
I think you need to be the kind of a person who cares about other people and cares
okay.
to the extent that they can put their own agenda aside or use their agenda to bring other people up with them,
mm-hmm.
to inspire and to nurture future leaders. You know, I'm standing on the shoulders of the one that came before. And I think that's where it's at for me, because no one is going to be here forever. We'd like to feel our spirit lives on forever. But so many times when I go through the course of a day, I think of things that my mother told me, that she showed me about being kind and trying to be understanding. Of course, I lose my patience. I'm not perfect. No one is. But trying to help those. And if it doesn't work in the adult community, it sure works in the academic world with little children, because
mm-hmm.
they need that. But I think anyone can be a leader. No one is born without feelings. No one is born without ambition. I think it's either damped down or it's lifted up. It depends upon your environment.
All right. So I think that you might have answered my next question with what you just said there, but maybe there's more to it, so let me go ahead with that. Why do you believe that it's important to write about leadership and empowerment at this time in our history?
Because I'm seeing a lost generation. I'm seeing a generation that is so technologically proficient that they have lost the art of communication. The other day my husband was driving home from work, and he picked me up, and this young man was crossing, wasn't looking left or right. He was so tuned to his BlackBerry or whatever device he was using that we could have knocked him down. Of course, my husband's a very cautious driver, thank God. But it just amazes me, no end, how young people, can I text you? It's like they're in their own little world, and they only come out of it when they're in their social milieu. When they are in their work environment, they're so tuned into all of the technology that they forget that there is a world outside. And that scares me more than anything else, because you need, you know, Barbara Streisand, people who need people. Well, you do need people. And Hillary, it takes a village. Hillary Clinton, it's as though this generation, if they are different, if they take a stand and if they say, I'm going to phone someone, I'm going to write them, it's like they're afraid that they will be ostracized by their peers. It's very frightening, it really is, because our generation grew up on getting back to people, follow-up, and of course you make mm-hmm. as many phone calls as you can, so that's scary. That scares me.
I'm trying to think of the exact quote of JFK, but you know, he certainly had a quote that went along with what you're saying, the concept of the importance of serving your fellow man. So I guess then let's look at it from the point of view of if we have we'll be making a recording of our call here, and if anybody who's listening or you or I want to send this recording out to where young people might listen to it and they're listening to what you just said, what do you think that we might advise them that they need to do to get out of the situation that they're in right now and help to motivate themselves to reach their goals and to become a more of a leadership leader and goal-oriented person?
I would say to motivate themselves, find out what it's like to communicate without all of these technical devices. Yes, you need to email people. You need to text people. You need to do all these things. But out of the office environment, it's not necessary to be so obsessed with these devices that you forget that there's a world outside. To phone someone, to have a conversation, to meet someone, to actually sit and talk to someone without sitting in Starbucks and being wired to your laptop for hours at a time. And to pass down to the younger generation. A lot of the young people that I do a lot of volunteer work with, children that are at risk of dropping out, and I notice how in between waiting for the next student to tutor, they're checking their messages. You know, it's fine, but when you young people are very impressionable, maybe do that outside of the tutoring area and read a book, read a newspaper. So when the child does come in, the child sees you doing something that requires thinking, higher order skills, rather than just, you know, punching numbers on a keypad.
Excellent. Oh, and so hopefully then we get lots of people that will be reading your book and learning the lessons that you've got in there about the styles of leadership and how to become a leader. So let's talk about what is it that you hope people will get out of reading this book. Let's help to people to say, I need to go out and buy this book. What are they going to get out of reading it?
They're going to get, the most important thing is self-knowledge. Maybe,
okay,
I think I want to be a leader, but wait a minute. Joan is talking about what it takes to do well in life, what it takes to follow a model, but follow something through and not give up. We're talking about Winston Churchill, never, 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 never give up. We're talking about a George Patton. We're talking about Abraham Lincoln. For heaven's sakes, the man becomes president at, what, 60 or thereabouts, and someone shoots him.
Right.
It's the capacity to listen to different points of view, as I say in the book. It's all about loyalty. It's about caring about people, about not putting me, myself, and I. It's about having the courage of your convictions, but it's also about knowing yourself, knowing what makes you tick, knowing what's good for you, knowing what isn't. And it's also about, as you progress through life, being a career changer. What does it take to go into this field? Having the courage. Even for me, having the courage to sit and put my bottom in the seat and write, because I know that this is the important way to go about it, and not be concerned about the world around me, about what somebody else is doing. No, not comparing myself to anyone. But also, it takes just knowing what you can and can't do. And if you can't do one thing, switching gears, going to something else. And that doesn't exclude retirement. They won't hire me because they look at all the experience I have. Well, how can I channel what I've got and make that into something that can be marketable? I mean, reinventing, 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 and using my book to do that through empowerment. It's all about reinventing and empowerment, empowerment and motivation. And also, I'm very lucky. I do have a very supportive husband, and I have marvelous friends, but I think it's all about stepping up to the plate and empowering yourself. It's when no one is around and you are faced with, either in my case, a blank computer screen, you have to fill the page, Or in many cases, many people, they see the cup as half empty instead of half full because they've come to a critical point in their career where do I go from here?
Mm-hmm. Excellent. A very good summary. One thing that I've noticed as I've been listening to the things that you've been saying this evening, many times, whether you've said it directly or whether you've alluded to it, you're talking about role models. You talked about the importance of your parents and how you were able to model what you became as an adult over because of knowing and being constantly in contact as a child with your parents. And they were wonderful role models, it's clear, as I can tell from listening to what you've said about them. And I think that you've alluded to that young people need to have role models. So if it is true what I see so much in the media, and I don't have as much contact with young people in my life these days as you do, but if it's true that families aren't what they used to be, that people don't sit down and have dinner together anymore, so there isn't as much interaction within families, how would you advise that young people can find role models, and can even just reading about people like the profiles that you put in your book, or even books like Kennedy's Profiles in Courage, which you know talks about some exemplary people and you know tells us a little bit about those people, is that a way that people can gain the value of a role model without having someone as precious as a parent who can serve as a role model?
Well, I think that's where the schools have to step up to the plate. A lot of counselors, a lot of teachers, a lot of people that children interact with. I know my friend Vicky, finding a mentor, reaching out within the community to find someone who will help you, whether it be a priest, a rabbi. I'm very lucky. I'm Jewish. I have a lovely rabbi who was very helpful when my father passed away, and I thought I was losing it. And believe it or not, a very, very dear friend, a priest who I've known for 30 years, who helped me even more when my mother passed away, because that was, I felt like I lost myself because we were so close. So it's about finding someone who can bring meaning to your life. And you know, yes, it's true. It is impossible with today's world. I mean, two parents, they get home from work, they're tired, and not only sooner do they take off their coat and they're ready to sit down, then one of the girls has to go to hockey. One of the boys has to go to this, has to go to that. People are making more. Well, in this economy, no one's making a lot, but there's more open to young people. There's more going on today than when we were growing up. Life was simpler then. We had simple pleasures, and today things are more complicated. And I have a friend whose daughter is well into her 40s, and she's glued to the idea of just texting constantly. She'll have a quick dinner, and she'll spend the rest of the evening in her room texting someone. And I think it's bad, because her mother's a lovely person, and she should be spending some quality time with her mother. But, oh, my God, to spend quality time with one's mother when one's mother has been out of the workforce for a while, my God. My mother stopped working soon after I was born. They retired my parents to Florida. I couldn't wait to go down just so I could give her a big hug and sit and talk with her. It's very different today. So finding someone who can make a difference in your life, finding someone who you can reach out to.
Excellent. Good point, and I'm glad that we got a chance to cover it that well. Now, I don't want to end a discussion about your book, and there's a few things that we need to cover before we end the call. But so as we're getting to the end of this hour, there's a number of exercises that are in your book, and I really think that it's important that we should talk about the exercises, what type of exercises they are, why you put them in the book, and are there any other exercises that you think that people could find elsewhere that would help them to develop their leadership muscles?
I think the exercises are very good. They come from my work experiences. And I purposely put them team, autocratic, and free reign because I wanted people to be able to distinguish the styles. However, when I gave the workshop on Tuesday night, I mixed them all up. I gave them four scenarios, and it had every single style in there, and I did that on purpose so that they were able to pinpoint what they thought their style would be. And it was marvelous. At first, they were very leery. They were very nervous. I said, you're not going to be graded on this. And some of these, three of the participants were very, very young. They were freshmen, and they'd never done anything like this before, and it empowered them. I think reading a book is great. I think being able to applied knowledge is the best. You have to be able, long before you set foot in an office, to apply these things. And as you grow, they even said to me when they came into the workshop, it was about an hour long, it was all the time we had in the room, they said, we've changed our they said at the beginning, I was a team player, then I was a facilitator, another one said I was participatory, and that's good. You have to be able to apply what you've learned. Otherwise, what's the point of reading a book? You have to be able to get something out of it, and you have to be able to challenge yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know that I meant to say this up front when I was introducing you, Joan, and I realized as we've been talking that I didn't. So I want to, before I get to the end of the call here today, I want to let people know what it is that you'd like to have as an offer for those of people that are listening on the call, and I'd like it if you would explain that to us, please, at this time.
Yes, what I would like to do is people in all stages of their careers are reticent to talk to someone in their company because, oh, my God, what are they going to think? They're going to think I want their job. Oh, my God, human resources are going to put it on the records. So at a sliding scale, depending upon where you are on the financial spectrum in this economy, I am offering motivational leadership services to people if they'd like to email me. I will make an accommodation for a nominal fee to help them to move either a foot in the door, a foot up the door, a foot out the door into something better. But just so they don't feel that, you know, they're operating in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
So
well,
they can,
Jane,
they can email me.
Great. And your email address is, again, writerjr1044@gmail.com.
Yes.
I think that we've had a really excellent discussion here. Joan and I thank you for being willing to be our guest here and for this great discussion on leadership. But I'm always aware that I might not have asked all the questions that you think that need to come out, you know, that or something that might have been alluded to during the course of our discussion, but we didn't really cover enough. So I'm going to say at this point, is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up this call?
To be honest with you, I think this is one of the most thorough interviews I've ever had in my entire time with this book so far. You have been so professional, and you have just taken my book and you have laid it out as a roadmap for success. I'm very flattered. I just think you've done it such justice. You haven't eliminated anything. Your questions have been very effective, and you've used the time efficiently, and I can't think of anything else I can add.
Well, thank you very much. That's just a wonderful accolade that I certainly wasn't expecting. So since there isn't anything else, I will get here to reviewing the important things that we've covered here with regard to your book. And before I do that, let me thank everyone who's joined us for the evening. This has, I think, been a wonderful call with Joan Ramirez. And if you have a question for Joan after the call, I'm sure that just as you can contact her at her email address to take advantage of her offer, you can also send her an email with a question, just a quick question. I think is, you know, not necessarily involving coaching or anything, but just, you know, clarification of something that we might have spoken about tonight. So once again, I want everyone to know, Joan, that your email address is writerjr1044 joe1044@gmail.com. And I want to make sure that everyone listening knows that all of your books, Joan, including Let It Go, Let It Flow, Leadership, and the two that you wrote earlier, which could you remind me of them? The one was about...
Yes, Jamie is Autistic and Go For It Leadership Handbook for All Students. That's the one I was so keen because of Eleanor Roosevelt.
Right, that you covered Eleanor in that one, and then this was other leaders coming in this one. All three books are available on Amazon.com. Are they available in bookstores too, or traditional bookstores?
No, basically online.
Okay.
Basically online, which is...
I'm much more into going to online to get my books, so I'm glad you're going that route. And as she alluded to, she does individual coaching. So if you're frustrated over leadership issues, Joan invites you to contact her via her email address and arrange a phone workshop that will help you to overcome leadership issues and help you to apply the principles in her book. So that, in a nutshell, is what I want to make sure that everyone knows about you, Joan, before we close the call. I also want to tell anyone listening who might have found out about us without necessarily knowing about NABBW, I'd like to say that if you want to know more about the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, you can find us online at www.nabbw.com. We have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com and a Facebook page at facebook.com/NABBW. So is there anyone listening who has a question? I've kind of plowed through and asked questions and realized I don't have a lot of time for questions, but we have the ability to stay over a few minutes if anybody has a question, and we still have a few minutes before the hour ends. So I'm opening the call lines right now in case anyone wants to ask Joan a question.
Okay.
Well, maybe I've talked so long, Joan, that they're feeling like there's not enough time to jump into something right now. But they do know how to reach you if a question comes up later, and so I hope that you listeners will take advantage of that. And so I'm going to say thank you very much, Joan, for being our guest. This has been a very excellent call. Thank you to our listeners for joining us tonight. And good night, everyone.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Oh, that's right. How could I forget that?
Happy holidays.